Political violence pays. That's a shocking claim from a former Secretary of State for Northern Ireland in a new BBC documentary called Who Won the War. James Prior, now Lord Prior, says in the long run, violence probably did work. And in a rare exception to the rules, the BBC journalist who presents the programme, Peter Taylor, gives his opinion and makes a similar assessment. But does violence work? Did the IRA's bombing and shooting lead to Sinn Féin getting into government? And what about loyalist violence? Did it prevent a united Ireland? Well, they're hugely controversial questions, these, aren't they? And we want you to help us talk about them this morning. You know the number, 08459 555 678. I've been speaking to Peter Taylor about his documentary. We're going to play the interview to you in full after the 10 o'clock news this morning. But first, have a listen to when Peter and I discussed the comments Lord Prior made about violence. The interview starts with a clip from the documentary.
Seeing Sinn Féin in power at Stormont brings home to me an unpalatable truth. It's there because voters put it there, the ultimate triumph of the ballot box. But it was the Armalite that paved the way by breaking the mould of the unionist state.
Violence paid, didn't it? Isn't that one of the lessons? However unpalatable that may be.
I think violence probably does work. It may not work quickly, and it may not be seen to be working quickly, but in the long run, one has to look back and say, yes, it did work.
Peter, that's quite extraordinary for such a senior politician to say violence pays.
I was astonished when I heard Lord Prior say that. I thought he would give a fairly standard answer saying that, you know, violence doesn't work, only that the settlement that we have now is the result of politics and discussion and debate, not the result of violence. But when he came out and said violence, you know, the lesson is that violence does work, I was quite stunned. And because I say, as you've heard in one of my links, that, you know, I believe that violence actually broke the mould of the one-party state of unionist-dominated politics through the 60s, well, actually for 50 years, I thought that was going to be fairly controversial, but that's what I believe. And I was encouraged by my producers at the BBC to make it a sort of personal journey, a personal story.
So you believe that violence pays?
I believe if you look at what has happened over the past 40 years, the period that I've been covering the conflict, I have little doubt that it was violence that actually broke the mould. So violence did pay in as much as it brought us to where we are now. That I don't believe that we would have had the negotiations that were the prerequisite of the political solution, the Good Friday Agreement, without the recognition by the British, as Martin McGuinness accepts and the British accept, that they could not defeat the IRA and the IRA could not defeat the British. And that was the result of a violent campaign. What flowed from that was the Good Friday Agreement and the political arrangement that we have at Stormont today. So I believe, as I say, although it's an unpalatable message, it's one that's confirmed by Lord Prior that violence did actually pay.
It's quite a message, this, isn't it, for dissident Republicans and angry loyalists who took to the streets recently?
I think you're absolutely right. It is an unpalatable message, and there will be those who say that's not a message that, you know, we should reflect, because it gives, you know, succour to the dissidents and loyalists and other paramilitary organisations who are individuals and groups who've used violence in the past. But I think that, you know, my job as a journalist is to reflect realities, not what, you know, people might prefer us to reflect, which is that, you know, violence doesn't pay.
Well, the former Sinn Féin Director of Communications, Danny Morrison, listening to that, as is the commentator, Malachy O'Doherty. Morning, Danny.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, good morning. Malachy, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. Good morning, Danny.
Well, there you have it, Malachy. Does violence pay? Okay. Question for us all listening to the programme this morning. Does violence pay, Malachy?
Well, I think that's a very superficial reading of it. I think essentially the IRA campaign did achieve one thing. It was a veto on any political alternative, so long as it was prepared to exercise that veto. Prior discovered that himself, for instance, that he couldn't manage his rolling devolution plan and include nationalists through the SDLP in that while the IRA campaign was continuing. But if you judge the IRA campaign by its declared objectives from the beginning, which essentially was a united Ireland and a socialist revolution in Ireland, it clearly didn't achieve that. So I think, Prior is being a wee bit fuzzy on this, and Taylor is being a bit disingenuous.
Yeah, let's remind ourselves it's not just the IRA we're talking about when we ask this question. It's loyalists as well. Danny Morrison.
Yeah, and you had Billy Hutchinson saying, for instance, that the UVF prevented a united Ireland. I mean, that's complete nonsense as well. There never was a prospect of a united Ireland in the last 100 years. You know, so it wasn't going to happen. And it didn't need violence on anybody's part to prevent it happening. And there was no point in anyone's violence to make it happen because it wasn't attainable.
So, Danny Morrison, here you have a former Secretary of State for Northern Ireland saying violence pays.
Well, Stephen, to tell you the truth, I'm astonished that any of you are astonished at that statement, because balance, the belief that balance pairs has probably been the belief of most humankind since the dawn of time. And does it work? Well, that usually depends on how it's pursued. See, if it didn't work, then Native Indians would be ruling North America and the Aborigines would be in government in Australia. So, of course, it's been, unfortunately, in our case, it was the first resort of the Storm government and later the British Army, instead of being the last resort. So when you turn around and say, of course, it applies to loyalists, there's something missing there from your psyche. The British state was involved in violence and, in my opinion, provoked the violence.
Well, Sinn Féin...
Well, first resort... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Malachy.
It was the first resort of the Provisional IRA as well. I mean, if you say... I mean, Danny's right. Certainly there are circumstances in which violence has worked. He hasn't answered the question of how it worked to achieve the end of United Ireland. But the other question is, even if it worked, was there another way that would have worked as well or even better? And there may well have been, because it wasn't tried. I mean, Peter Taylor is saying it broke the mould of Stormont rule and the Unionist majority in Northern Ireland. Well, that wasn't going to be sustainable in the long term anyway. It may be that, the civil rights campaign, had it thrived on the streets, had it not descended into violence in that way, as a passive resistance protest movement may have achieved its aims. And then even so, let's say, okay, there was inevitably going to be a breakdown of order. There was inevitably going to be the schmozzle that arose. Even then, you get to the dissolution of Stormont in 72 and the power-sharing arrangements established in 74. You certainly get nothing after that that can be said to be a particular achievement of either the IRA campaign, the Loyalist campaign. And, I mean, you say that the British campaign against the IRA and the paramilitaries didn't work, but they completely infiltrated the IRA. They were running the IRA. I mean, Scabatici was the head of security for the Provisional IRA, and you couldn't join the IRA unless you'd been vetoed by him. So, I mean...
If the IRA was so infiltrated, how come the IRA was able to carry out the Brighton bomb? How come the IRA was able to mortar bomb 10 Downing Street in the 1990s? How come so many men were able to escape from the H block? So what you're being disingenuous here
Maybe I am in a sense, and I mean, obviously they weren't completely neutralised. But I mean, just yesterday I was reading your letters from prison to Gerry Adams and to David McKittrick and others, and it's quite clear in those that you had come to the conclusion that the IRA campaign was going nowhere, that the electoral campaign of Sinn Féin was what had to be prioritised, and that somehow the IRA... You were censored by An Phoblacht for trying to say that in 1992. You said your own article was banged by An Phoblacht because you'd put in that article that the IRA either had to escalate and try and win or wrap it up.
But again, but don't be disingenuous, I was not aware at the time that there was tentative contacts between the Republican leadership and the British government. And therefore, that is the reason why they did not want that article published. And by the way, the listeners will not understand the complexities of this. So, I think we should stick to the main point here.
Liam Clark from the Belfast Telegraph is tweeting this morning. Peter Taylor concludes paramilitary violence pays, but the IRA lost the war. Says Liam Clark. Let's have a listen to this. Peter Taylor makes the point to Martin McGuinness in the documentary. Have a listen to this.
You believe that one day there will be a united Ireland?
I've never been as convinced of anything in my life that at some stage in the future there will be a reunified Ireland. Absolutely.
The IRA has not achieved that. Isn't that why you Republicans and former IRA volunteers are now rewriting history by claiming that the IRA was fighting for equality, which you've achieved, and that's a substitute for fighting for the IRA's real goal, which is the reunification of Ireland, which you haven't got.
The IRA were fighting to bring about the equality, yes, but also the reunification of Ireland. I'm still fighting for that, but I'm fighting for that politically.
And here's what Gerry Adams and Billy Hutchison said when they were asked of violence pays.
You use the term violence, and it's a very pejorative term.
Well, it's about killing people, injuring people. That's what violence is. That's what the campaign resulted in.
Yes, but that's what the war resulted in. It would have been better that there was no war. But you show me anywhere in the world where people have won either a modicum of decency and rights, or indeed, in terms of colonial wars, won independence, that it didn't happen after bloodletting.
What did loyalist violence achieve?
It prevented a united Ireland.
Why do you say that?
Because we don't have one. Violence was not the only thing, but it was one of the things that actually prevented it.
Well, this is all part of a documentary that was out on Monday night on BBC One Northern Ireland at 9 o'clock. It's called Who Won the War? You'll want to see it. Right, you'll want to react to this morning as well. Nathan, first call of the morning. Morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Does violence pay?
Don't know whether violence pays or not, but I think it's a shame and disgrace. At 20 past 9 on a Friday morning, we're promoting violence. And asking, does it pay?
Well, we're not promoting violence, are we? We're asking the question, given the context of this documentary, and it is a relevant question in Northern Ireland.
Able to talk about it this morning. What about the poor craters in Roselawn, Carmoney, Belfast City Cemetery?
Well, that's the point. Absolutely, that's part of this story.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, how would you answer the question when you're asked it? Does violence pay?
Well, obviously it does, Stephen, because we've got the leader of a former terrorist organisation as our Deputy First Minister. He has got his way to the top of our country. But it works all over the world, Stephen.
But he's there by votes, isn't he?
But if he hadn't have been the leader of the IRA, he wouldn't have ever been there.
Okay. Nathan, thank you. Patricia next. Morning, Patricia.
Good morning, Stephen.
How would you answer the question?
Well, first of all, I hesitate not to agree with Peter Taylor because of so much respect for him, for his work over the years. But in this case, I actually do think that because in his answer to you anyway, he seemed to leave out some important, not least what Nevin was talking about, that, you know, the cost. We have the walking wounded. Well, never. I mean, how can you ever say campaign of violence paid off when you have so many families affected? But as well as that, my main points are two. One is the relationships between North and South, although they have mended somewhat in the last year or so and since the ceasefire, they in fact were made worse. I would argue that we were in a sort of bubble during the Troubles and it meant we left off being modernised and having relationships down South. People down South, even now, I know academics would not come up to the North, and if you talk to people in the South, they don't want to talk about here because they just think we're mad. They think we're absolutely mad. So it's a backward step as regards relationship, which might be productive. For example, the debate over the last week about having your health of children thing too in Dublin or something. People are accepting it if it's a good thing. How many other things might have happened that would have, you know, brought us closer together? But my second point is equally as important, and that is that do you remember John Dunlop on Sunday Sequence the other week referred to sectarianism as a virus, and he said something along that he was, you know, it was in the context of discussing Mr. Paisley, and he said that virus that was here, he exacerbated that, instead of which we should have been working to do down that virus and get it out of our system, and also connect it with that sectarianism. We now can see that our politicians have a model of behaviour based on using sectarianism for their own interests.
Okay, Patricia, thank you very much indeed. 08459 555 678. You wonder what message this sends out, Danny Morrison, to dissidents.
Well, I don't think that they can take any suckers from it because they do not have the support that the Republican movement had when the conflict was at its height, when you had British Army sealing off entire streets, doing house-to-house searches. I mean, I was at the dance one night, and they came in and raided the Clonard dance hall, lifted 80 teenagers, brought us to Springfield Old Barracks and then Castlereagh. You know, the gun battles on the street, the IRA were taking on the British Army. There was the RUC were involved in questionable interrogations at Castlereagh and Golf Barracks and Strand Road. But that atmosphere is gone, and I feel comfortable in my own skin now. And when people talk about, oh, nothing has changed, things have changed. There's no doubt about it. Where I live now, this is not the state that I grew up in. The glue behind the Northern Ireland state and the ethos and culture of it was, and it's mentioned in the programme, Protestant Parliament for Protestant people. That's gone.
Here's Ian next. Morning, Ian.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Ian.
Stephen, just before I start, could I ask a question? In 1972, we had a referendum to decide whether we would be going to United Ireland or not. The old IRA wouldn't allow the nationalist population to vote. Why? But quite honest, to this day, I still think that all they did was just waste life. Because was there an inch of ground got gained? Was anything gained? Nothing. And quite honest, I have friends down in Dublin and they don't even want to know us up here.
Well, for those people who asked the question, did loyalist violence prevent a united Ireland?
Their loyalist violence, what you call it.
Did it prevent a united Ireland?
No, but I tell you what it did do. It brought the way called the dissidents, or they brought the IRA to the negotiating table because they found out that the UVF and the UDA could just be as dirty and as rotten as them. I didn't agree with what they did, but the unfortunate thing is, I remember when my youngsters were growing up, the biggest bonfire we had was organised by a wee Catholic boy, and the biggest bonfire, and there was laughing and dancing, and we called they collected £8, which was a lot of money, but we called they had a great time. That all went out the window, all because, well, I don't know, right? But I blame myself too. Maybe we should have been more vigilant, and maybe we should have been more kept ourselves on our feet and feet in the head and the ground instead of what you call listening to the dreams of people, politicians that were trying to make names for themselves. But I'm quite honest, as far as I can see, the down south does not want United Ireland, and what you call all the violence was not. I remember what you called a very good friend of mine. His son blew himself up. He was in the IRA. His daughter got shot by going to work one morning just because she was a Catholic. I can't even say that. I've seen people getting hurt. I've seen what you call even my own family. I had a terrible, difficult time stopping them from getting bitter. I had to tell them what you were born with. What you call? I was born a Protestant. I could have been easily born a Catholic. Would that have made another inch of ground? But was there an inch of ground even saved? 40 years wasted.
Okay.
Look at the money. Look at the money went into Northern Ireland. We could have had the biggest and the best country in the world if all those millions of pounds had went in to the economy of Northern Ireland.
Listen, thank you.
Terrorism.
Thank you. Good morning. Michael, good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Stephen.
Don't forget the title of this programme, Who Won the War? How would you answer that?
Stephen, on your point of does violence pay, not a simple answer, but no, it doesn't pay. And as someone mentioned earlier, go to the graveyards and see the people who died. What? We're no nearer a united Ireland. And for Billy Hutchison to turn around and say that they prevented a united Ireland, his philosophy then must be kill Catholics and you'll avoid a united Ireland. Stephen, this country was born out of violence. This country has power sharing where two parties are inextricably going in different directions. One of them, the biggest party, the DUP, wants to remain within the United Kingdom. Definitely.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
All right, Michael, thank you. Let me bring in Brendan. Good morning, Brendan.
Hi there, I'm Stephen. Listen, I was born in 1966. I lived up not too far from you in Springmorton. I was burnt out of my house in 1972. I was a refugee in St Bernadette School in Ballymurphy. When I was growing up, I would never have got a job. Any interview I went to, as soon as you seen your name, you were just dismissed. So, of course, if you can't get stuff through politics, there's no other solution. You have to go to a military solution. There was no choice. It's terrible that people died, yes.
When you say military solution...
Well,
no, don't euphemise this. When you say military solution, you know, you do have to go to killing people? You do have to go to blowing people up, do you?
Oh, yeah, of course you do.
Well, that's... No, you don't. Sorry, no, you don't. No, of course you don't. No, you do not.
What happened to the civil rights movement? They were put down.
Don't start to sanitise violence and murder and killing in this country.
I'm not sanitising it. I'm just saying it's a practical reality. If you can't get one... But you go to option B.
Right, okay, so you don't believe in democracy. You don't believe
in democracy, but we didn't live in a democratic state.
What's the difference?
About the UVF burning me out of my house in 1972?
What's the difference between what you're saying and what Al-Qaeda says? What's the difference between what you're saying and the people who are beheading people in another part of the world saying?
Well, let's look at that. Who brought Al-Qaeda to the fore? When the British government and Americans moved into the Middle East. It's part of their colonialism. They wanted cheap oil, so they put Saddam Hussein in place to start with. Is that not true? Then there was the Arab Spring. Where did they get all the weapons from? The Yanks gave them the weapons. So, yes, it's true. It's blunt and it's cruel and it's vicious, but it's true. Had I got a house in 1972, had I not been burnt out of my house, had I got a decent education, and the rate of employment, the rate of civil rights, we didn't have a vote here. So what choice did we have? First, let's remember, it was the UVF that killed the first people. It was the UVF that cut people up. And who backed them? The British government and our state. So let's be brutally honest about it. Special Branch in the RUC ran the UVF and the IRA. Who ran them? The British state.
So Malachy? Malachy O'Doherty?
Is that true, Malachy?
Malachy's just dropped off. Okay, Malachy.
Is that true?
Malachy, Danny Morrison, thank you.